This is an interview with Mr. Dayal in New York City at the United Nations on March 31st, 1992.
All right, good. So I'll just put this. Perhaps, if it's all right, I'll put it here, and then it's closest to you.
Sure thing.
Okay. And I don't know how much time you have, so you let me know.
Let's play it by ear.
Okay, good, good. Well, as you know, we're working on the memoirs for President Cryard. So there may be other times when I'll need to come and talk to you as
certainly.
We get into other topics.
Certainly.
Right now, we're trying to sort of start at the end of his tenure here, because the people like yourself are still here, and then you know we can talk about those issues, and then we'll kind of work backwards. So specifically today, what I wanted to ask you was some information about your mission to Baghdad, as I understand. You did take a trip there. Can you tell me approximately when you went on that mission?
Well, I went twice to Baghdad.
You went twice, all right.
The first time I went, just Kofi Annan, and that had to do, that was roughly, I forget the exact dates, towards the latter part of August.
Oh, okay, so shortly after Iraq had invaded Kuwait. Okay.
That was the time when ISU was really the detainees. You know, the human shields that there.
Right, okay, so that was the issue the first time that you went.
That's the issue the first time.
Okay.
And that concluded in Amman when the sixth general came there.
Oh, I see. So did you meet first in Baghdad?
No, first what happened was that I was sent ahead to Baghdad.
Okay.
Let's talk about all the people who had been taken hostage.
Right.
After finishing my work there, I then met him in Amman for talks of Tariqa's youth.
Right, right.
And then the second time, of course, I went to Baghdad, which was in January, just before the major fighting involving the coalition and Iran.
So that when you went back in January, were you with the Secretary General at that time?
Okay.
So first let's talk about the time in August that you were there. Who did you meet with in Baghdad at the time?
Oh, it was Tariq Aziz.
Tariq Aziz.
And his assorted assistants and aides and so on and so forth. Had quite a few hours with Tariq Aziz. Under the guise of the humanitarian affair. Tried to disabuse him of any thoughts he might have had about the levity of the resolution of the Security Council. And it was interesting because I don't think we realized in Baghdad how the world had changed, you see.
Right, yeah.
They didn't realize the Soviet Union was already on the way to becoming the Russian Federation.
Right, yeah.
I think they just missed calculated, misjudged things all the way down the line. But even to misjudge things, you have to have a mindset of your own, you see.
Right.
Why is it that one mind doesn't misjudge and another does?
Right, yeah.
And there, of course, people can have different views of what went wrong in Baghdad in the minds of people like Saddam Hussein and Tariq Aziz. But I have a feeling that they were imprisoned by their own sense of the history of their country.
Right.
And by their own sense of its historical role.
Right, right.
And somehow or the other, they couldn't make the decisions that they needed to make that would have averted really the ferocity of what followed.
Right, yeah. Now, when you went, was this, were you sent by the Secretary General?
Yes.
So it was part of the good offices of the Secretary General?
Well, yes, in a way it was. It wasn't presented as good offices of the Secretary General because we needed a thin disguise to get there, you see. So it was ostensibly on the grounds of the need to release all the people who were not being able to get out, you see.
Uh-huh.
Including, of course, vast numbers of UN officials.
Right, right, yeah.
Because they were scattered the length and breadth of Iraq.
And
many of them were in Kuwait, which is now under Iraqi occupation.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
So I forget the exact number now, but there were hundreds of UN people.
Mm-hmm.
And UN people of all nationalities, including countries whose citizens had been taken away as what were later called human shields, you see.
Right, right.
And so we were able to really get every last UN official out, including those who had been taken away to these protected areas, or these areas which were politically or militarily sensitive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They really had to be retrieved, you know.
Yeah.
An Italian from here, a Japanese from there,
right.
An Englishman from here, an American from there. They had been taken away from the rest of the UN group.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
And they had been, I shouldn't say incarcerated, but they'd been lost to our people.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd been taken away to these areas where they were, where they had brought these foreign nationals in order supposedly to protect their own installations and so on.
Right, right.
So we were able to get out every last one of them.
Now, was this strictly on the Secretary General's initiative, or was there
what had happened was there had been these resolutions of the Security Council.
Yeah, yeah.
660s. 664 and etc. Et
yeah, right.
Now, more than one of them had referred to the question of foreign nationals.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it was supposedly to talk about the quote unquote humanitarian problem of foreign nationals that I went there.
Right. Okay.
And in the process of the discussions, of course. We were able to get out all of our people.
Right, okay.
And many other foreign nationals in addition.
Uh-huh.
And to set up mechanisms for the departure of a large number of other foreign nationals.
Okay.
So that at the end of our efforts, in fact, there were still far too many foreign nationals who were still dispersed around the Iraqi countryside as human shields.
Mm-hmm.
But the number had been greatly reduced because of the conversations that we had over there.
Yeah. So, in other words, there were provisions within the Security Council resolutions that would provide a kind of mandate for the Secretary General.
Yes, except what we did was, the Secretary General, you see, again, what he did was, if my memory holds now, he purposely made the announcement that he was sending me, accompanied by Kofi Annan. He purposely made the announcement before the resolution was adopted.
Oh, okay.
The one which dealt strenuously with foreign nationals.
Okay.
He did that so that he could, as it were, I won't say separate my mission from the Council resolution, but let the Iraqis feel that he'd taken the decision prior to the Council's resolution.
Right. Right.
Hoping thereby that if the Iraqis were grumbling about the resolution, they would be at least cooperative with us.
Right, and that seemed to have worked then.
Well, I would say it was in part that, in part the fact that, you know, presumably we argued the case not too badly, in part because they wanted to be halfway conciliatory.
Right.
Whatever it was, all of our people came out, and many others in addition.
Now, I ask that in contrast to, because I perhaps you can clarify this for me also, because I understand that Sadruddin Aga Khan had been designated by the Secretary General to be a special representative for humanitarian affairs in the Iraq-Kuwait situation. But that then he was not allowed in to Iraq, and there was some, as I understand, there was some feeling that his appointment had been under the approval of the Security Council, and then did get combined with their reaction to the resolution. Is that correct?
Yes, the appointment of Sadruddin was subsequent to our...
Yes, later, yeah, in September.
And you see, Sadruddin's appointment was made largely because... I won't say in part because of our efforts, but in part because of the way in which the situation evolved, vast numbers of foreign nationals, apart from the Europeans, were suddenly able to leave.
Mm-hmm.
That included many people from the former Third World. And suddenly the Iraqis decided to lift the restrictions of the movement of people from the Third World. So really, thousands upon thousands of Indians, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, Filipinos, Egyptians, and the rest,
uh-huh.
were able to start coming out, you see.
Right, right.
Along the route, which wasn't particularly pleasant, it was hot as hell, it was late summer, it was very, very hot.
Right.
And they arrived helter-skelter in great disorder, and not much but the stuff on their backs and on the top of a truck, into Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And some went towards Iran and so on and so forth. It was great disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they were able to come out.
Yes, right.
Our efforts to try and get the whole thing orchestrated by the UN, the departure wasn't particularly successful. But we were successful in getting the gates opened for them.
Mm-hmm.
So by whatever means they could, they hopped into their own cars and their gasoline, they made it to the border, they got the trucks, they shared things, they climbed on donkeys, whatever they could, they did, you see.
Yeah.
Then when they arrived in places like Jordan, we found that there was an awful mess because so many of them came so suddenly and there was no water. And no water, no food, the heat was terrible. Usual face problem of dysentery, lack of breakout. So, in those circumstances, we recommended that Sadruddin should be appointed.
Okay.
I mean, I made the suggestion to Persever.
Okay.
And Asafi was handling it, but Andrew hadn't quite been able to match the needs, you see. There was need for a higher political profile.
Right, okay.
So I went to Geneva with Jean-Claude Aimé.
Okay, so you went with Aimé
to Geneva.
But after your trip to Baghdad in August, but before Sadruddin started?
Before his appointment.
Before his appointment, okay. So that would be right at the beginning of September.
Went there in order to make sure that no feathers would be unduly ruffled.
Mm-hmm.
Because Stoltenberg was wondering why he wasn't being asked to do it, and Asafi was wondering why he wasn't being asked to do it, and X, Y, and Z had aspirations to coordinate the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we felt it's better not to have someone from an existing program.
Okay.
Because it's precisely they who needed to be coordinated, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then we had a more than one discussion together, prepared the announcement about Sadruddin, got him appointed, had a meeting with the agencies and donors and all the rest of it, and the countries most directly concerned in terms of their nationals.
Mm-hmm. And was it felt that he would be acceptable to Iraq?
Well, you see, yes, it was so hoped.
Yeah.
Partly, because I mean, Sadruddin was not a stranger to that part of the world.
Right.
Partly because he had good credentials on the humanitarian side, everybody held him in respect.
Right.
But then they didn't let him come.
Right.
The Iraqi anger against the Security Council resolution was quite considerable.
Mm-hmm. Well, did the Security Council ask that they approve his appointment?
No.
Is that part of it?
No, it wasn't that.
No.
Okay. It's just that as the resolutions kept being adopted, the temper of the Iraqis became more and more recalcitrant. I mean, it's not that they were particularly, what should I say, the opposite of recalcitrant. It's not that they were particularly forthcoming.
Yeah, to begin with. Yeah, right.
Quite the contrary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But their reaction to the resolutions was not of cooperativeness.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say stiffened their resolve to be difficult, because that was bad enough as it was.
Mm-hmm.
But they just kind of dug in, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they would not be forthcoming. And every effort to try and explain to them the peculiar circumstances in which they found themselves, in terms of the severity of the reaction of the council and the fact that it was a kind of an irrevocable severity,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that message they were loath to listen to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in any conversation with them, they would start off, so to speak, at the wrong end of the stick, you see.
Yeah,
they would
always
start off by wanting to create linkages of a kind which we knew were palpably impossible.
Sure. Okay.
But they didn't seem to grasp this, or if they did grasp it, they decided to try it out, you see.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was the sad part of it, because all the way to the finishing line, so to speak, on the 17th of January, they hoped to get away with it, you see.
Right.
Or if not get away with it, they were resigned to the outbreak of war.
Right. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to back up a little bit, again, back to your mission in August. Was it strictly humanitarian,
insofar as these things can ever be described as strictly humanitarian, you see, because, I mean, the supposed purpose of it was humanitarian, and mm-hmm. indeed that was a purpose, and the major purpose of it.
Right.
We made progress.
Right.
But there was another message which we needed to convey. And that was the need for Iraq to understand that the Council of Resolutions were not negotiable things.
Okay.
These were mandatory resolutions, you know.
Okay.
And just because they were unfamiliar with
you need to pick that up.
I will just see.
So in that it was a humanitarian mission, you would naturally get into some political.
Of course, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent hours talking with Tariq Aziz,
mm-hmm.
and trying to tell him that things had changed, you know, in the world,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that I saw nothing but imminent danger,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To even the danger of a most grievous kind.
Right.
And all the signals were there. The people were not bluffing. They shouldn't try it out.
Yeah.
It wasn't a game of chicken that they were playing. This thing was for
real,
you see.
That's right, yeah.
You know, I tried every conceivable way of letting them understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was a moment when I was there in Baghdad in August when I felt actually that the hostilities might be quite imminent.
Mm-hmm.
That was because there were suddenly reports that Iraq was moving chemical weapons to Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
And their siege of the foreign embassies in Kuwait was intensified in
mm-hmm.
spite of the resolutions of the council.
Mm-hmm.
There was a night there, now I forget the exact day. The date I forget, but I have it in my records, when I had a sense that the Iraqis are provoking the rest of the world just too much.
Yeah.
And that because the Iraqis were moving extra supplies of chemical weapons and so on to Kuwait, I felt that there might be a very quick, sharp confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed the possibility of imminent conflict.
Right.
Because the coalition was already getting into shape, and there was a plentiful wish to get the thing over and done with early on rather than let time pass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were pros and cons, you see, for getting the thing over and done with in the end of August itself,
sure.
rather than dallying.
Yeah.
As we did till January.
Right.
It was on that night that I sent a message to Mr. Perez de Cuellar,
mm-hmm.
from there, saying, look, sectional things are pretty awful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But may I suggest you invite Tariq Aziz to meet with you.
I see, okay.
Send him a message by return.
Right.
It's nightfall here now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it could help defuse things.
Right.
If by the time we all woke up in the morning, there's a message for Tariq Aziz to see you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And don't ask him to see you tomorrow, because he, for his own purposes, won't come tomorrow. But give him a time about a week away.
Right, okay.
Because that will give everyone time to cool off a little bit in case hostilities are imminent.
Yeah.
And it will help perhaps change the atmosphere in which we are functioning.
Mm-hmm. So sort of defuse
To try it like that.
Yeah, okay. Uh-huh.
So much to my relief, by the time I woke up in the morning at 6, I put on the news and I heard that Ms. Guo had invited Vladimir Putin to meet with her. And that the invitation would be extended to meet with him in New York or Geneva. I knew that he couldn't meet in either of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a fallback position to meet in Amman. I knew, but I wanted a little time to elapse between the invitation and the meeting.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So as to give.
Yeah.
The Iraqis time to digest it, you see.
Right. The timing is important.
Not to have a meeting tomorrow.
Right.
But fix a meeting a week down the road. So uh-huh. Everyone would go into slow motion for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it looked ominous. There was a certain time around the 20th of, on the 25th of August when the atmosphere was foul.
Mm-hmm. And then you went directly from Baghdad
to Amman and met
the Secretary General.
Met the Secretary General there, and we had these talks with Vladimir.
Right. So then did you brief the Secretary General?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, I'd been briefing him intensely when I was there.
Right.
I was sending him telegrams.
Yeah.
Created,
uh-huh.
Very full telegrams and conversations. And
so what were your impressions of the Secretary General's meeting then with Tariq Aziz at that point in Amman?
Well, you see, the Secretary General went over the whole terrain with him, you know,
mm-hmm.
with all of the kind of care and meticulousness which marked his way of doing things. I mean, he went over the whole thing from Alpha to Omega with Tariq Aziz,
mm-hmm.
explaining the purport of the resolutions, explaining what was required, trying to convince him that if they went along with a degree of cooperativeness, that he would try and help them
mm-hmm.
to sort of climb down the ladder, even though they really didn't deserve this kind of solicitude, really.
Mm-hmm.
But Tariq Aziz was a smooth guy, never seemed to, just didn't seem to have the capacity to turn the course of events around, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Pezzequia said to him, look, if you need instructions, I'm prepared to wait in Amman.
Mm-hmm.
After all, we are 40 minutes flying time from Baghdad. You want to go and meet Saddam Hussein, you go there, I'll wait for you overnight.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Time and again, the Secretary General gave Tariq Aziz the opportunity to go and have consultations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Tariq Aziz came on a short leash.
Right.
And
yeah.
didn't take up the offer. Pezzequia said to him, look, okay, you can't come back here by tomorrow morning. Let's meet a week later in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
The offer wasn't taken up.
Mm-hmm.
There was about the whole thing, I won't say the quality of a Greek tragedy, but there was a quality of an Iraqi tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Much the same, you know. The
yeah,
great Mesopotamian tragedy we're making.
Right.
And there seemed to be no way to avoid it, despite whatever you might say.
Mm-hmm.
You see.
Mm-hmm.
The whole world was telling them to shape up, you know, find
right.
a way out. Everybody.
Yeah.
Their adversaries obviously were. The Security Council obviously was.
Mm-hmm.
The Secretary General, who was neither friend nor foe, but an honest interlocutor, he tried.
Mm-hmm.
But their friends were begging them to.
Right.
Third world countries were asking
yeah,
for
sure.
heaven's sake, get off this precipitous course.
Right.
Turn while there's time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to end in a catastrophe for everybody.
Right.
In progress.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, just, you know, to use this as a specific example, but to get a general idea on how Perez de Cuellar worked as a person, when he would send you on a mission like this, would he give you very specific instructions, or would he give you a kind of a general purpose and then let you have pretty much of a free hand?
A general purpose.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
When Perez de Cuellar trusted people, he trusted them.
Okay.
You see, what happened with some of us who were close to Affairs Affairs, I mean, we didn't really need to exchange an awful lot of words.
Mm-hmm.
We really understood each other.
Mm-hmm.
I say this not because I'm talking about this, but those of us who worked closely with him, we didn't really need an awful lot of instructions from him.
Right.
Because by the time we'd worked together for 7, 8, 9 years, we knew each other's minds, you see.
Right, right.
We knew, we had the same appreciation of what the strains of this organization could take.
Sure, okay, right.
And we knew, as far as, I knew instinctively what Perez Aquare would where he would want me to draw the line.
Mm-hmm.
See. Where I would need to be protective of the organization or of him, and where he would not expect me to be protective of him or of the organization. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. In other words, we knew how far we could go. We knew what he thought, but we didn't hesitate to express what we felt to him.
Mm-hmm.
But we were very often on the same wavelength as to instinctively,
mm-hmm,
after
mm-hmm.
a number of years we'd worked together.
Yeah, yeah.
There wasn't need for vast written instructions.
Right, right. But then when you would have suggestions, obviously from what you've said so far, he listened and he would take up on it.
Because again, you see, it was a, these were relationships of trust, you see, that developed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because we had worked so long together, I won't say we were of one mind, because then there would have been no fun. We were of diverse minds,
mm-hmm.
but we knew what the end should be. You see?
Yeah. Okay. What I also wanted to just briefly ask you this. Before August 2nd, when Iraq had gone, went into Kuwait, there had been in the news, quite a bit about the controversies
between the two countries.
Had either country or had anyone brought this to the attention of the UN? Were there any UN attempts at negotiating?
Now again, I'm not speaking to you after looking at the minutes of the meetings for the 2nd of August.
Right.
But my recollection is that all of us were very worried about it.
Right, yeah.
That in various ways the Secretary General had mentioned his anxieties on this,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
to various people, including to Tom Pickering and to others.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because we all saw the danger signs, you see.
Right.
But here there was, this is why Perez Aquare said in that speech of his in Bordeaux, you see. I mean, he said that it was, in looking back on it, there was a terrible failure of correct diplomacy,
mm,
you see, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The messages to Baghdad were not clear enough.
Early on, before August.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They were not clear enough.
Mm-hmm. On the part of the U.S. or
but
on the part
of, you see, of let's just say of all of us.
Okay.
See, but all of us exercise responsibility in different ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The U.S. obviously is the major power with the largest armed force,
mm-hmm,
which in the event led the coalition in battle, sent ambiguous signals.
Mm-hmm.
The Security Council half seized the matter, half not seized the matter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Lacked in, perhaps in clarity and ferocity,
mm-hmm,
before the 2nd of August. All of us didn't add up in our message, in our messages, to that kind of determined stance which might have deterred,
mm-hmm,
what occurred on the 2nd of August.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Indeed, on the night of the Iraqi invasion, I was at home, and Tom Pickering was attending a farewell for President Dick Hill. and he called me from this dinner seeing you. It was terrible news. Those tanks seems to have crossed in vast number into Kuwait. And I have a feeling that we're all going to be sitting in Security Council within a matter of an hour and a half or 20 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Do you know where the secretary is? So I said, look, Tom, I know he's gone out for dinner. I know where I can reach him.
Yeah.
Would you like me to put him on notice? So he said, yes, please do. So I got in touch with the secretary, and I told the secretary, the worst that we were fearing has happened. We've got a huge movement of Iraqis across the border. And Tom has called me. The American intelligence has it that they're crossing, and there are hundreds of thousands of those who are on the move.
Right.
And that if you don't mind, I strongly suggest you be on ready.